Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday morning. It is the 4th of April, 13 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock, and a delight to be with you as always. We have a wonderful panel. Let me introduce them, and a reminder that you can join in on the conversation, join in on the fun. And it is fun. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC. You just got very emotive there, Jim. I don't know if I've ever seen you that emotive. It's panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce everybody right now. WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
You caught me dumbfounded because usually I'm not the first.
I usually do the last, and then and then 2 days ago I accidentally omitted you. So I decided today to do it in alphabetical order.
Said Dr. Freud.
Yes. So Alan Shartok will start off. Now, does the Icarus Kelly come before Handler or after?
Well, it depends if you go by first or last.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
I was quite confused on the Alan goes first.
Well, Shartok would go before Icarus Kelly. If we're going by before, yeah, right?
Well, by last name. E C C.
I'm sorry. Missing something.
I'm missing something.
How do you spell Icarus?
Shartok.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Shartok.
I did the German / spelling.
Yes. A with an umlaut.
Right. All these people say, is it Shartok?
Yeah.
Or is it Shartok?
I was temporarily on the German track because I think I'm still traumatized by the fact that Trump said his father was born in Germany. And I was
three
so
times.
Upset about this. I'm
I
thinking, no, it's a lie.
We
but
disclaim
then,
you.
What am I, why am I upset?
But he wasn't, so.
He wasn't. Yeah.
He's born in New York.
So no, that's why. Grandfather. Yes, that would be.
Vera Icarus Kelly is a Siena College professor of comparative politics.
And a great one.
And we are thrilled to have you with us. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. It's great.
Jim Handler is up next. He is Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI, otherwise known as Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Great pleasure to have you.
Tetherful.
He was with us on Monday, and we had a short go-around, so we said, hey, would you like to see what a whole show is like? And Ewan McNay is back with us. He is associate professor and area head of behavioral neuroscience at UAlbany.
In the psychology department, but don't
but
ask
still
me
not psychology. That's true.
Yes. We're going to put on behavioral neuroscience.
So I just want to say that if you need a psychologist, I was a registered psychologist in the state of Texas for a few years.
God knows I need a psychologist.
I did a master's in psych because I was bored a few years.
Oh, just out of boredom? Did you see patients?
No, I was actually not.
He was a spy at
so
the time.
So that would be called a clinical?
I was a researcher.
Interesting.
That's what I played
with. Oh, okay. That's back to the
before
rat
the show,
conversation.
We were talking about rats.
Yes, we had a very interesting discussion about rats, actually. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. A delight to have you all with us again. Panel at WAMC.org if you would like to join in and add to the chorus of voices that you hear before us. I am quickly trying to find the stories that I sent out yesterday, and there they are. Okay, so the New York Times had an exclusive, sent out a very interesting report last night about what they did is they went and talked to members of Mueller's team, and they said, okay, we don't know what's in the Mueller report. We know what the Attorney General William Barr has said in his brief summary, 4 pages. But what is actually in the report? So they went to many of the investigators and talked to them. They told the New York Times that Attorney General William Barr failed to adequately portray the findings of their inquiry.
Surprise.
And that they were more troubling for President Trump than Mr. Barr indicated, according to government officials and others familiar with their quote, simmering frustrations, one of my favorite lines in an article this week. At stake in the dispute, the first evidence of tension between Mr. Barr and the special counsel's office is who shapes the public's initial understanding of one of the most consequential government investigations in American history. Some members of Mr. Mueller's team are concerned that because Mr. Barr created the first narrative of the special counsel's findings, Americans' views will have hardened before the investigation's conclusions become public, to which I say, duh, weren't we saying that a week and a half ago? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Barr has said he will move quickly to release the nearly 400-page report, but needs time to scrub out confidential information. The special counsel's investigators have already written multiple summaries of the report, and some team members believe that Mr. Barr should have included more of their material in the four-page letter that he wrote on March 24th, laying out their main conclusions, according to those government officials familiar with the investigation. Mr. Barr only briefly cited the special counsel's work in his letter, which is interesting because that is what he was summarizing. However, the special counsel's office never asked Mr. Barr to release the summary soon after he received the report, a person familiar with the investigation said. And the Justice Department quickly determined that the summaries contained sensitive information like classified material, secret grand jury testimony, and information related to current federal investigations that must remain confidential, according to two government officials. All right. So what do we make of this? Some, I think, we intuited. And others, we maybe had a hunch, and now we know.
One, Barr is a national disgrace, number one. You know, when he came on, I said, okay, you can give him a chance. He says he's going to play it honestly. He hasn't. We know that he basically sent the letter to Trump laying out his qualifications, which is that he didn't believe in the whole thing to begin with. So we know who Barr is. Now he's confirming it, even though he spoke differently when he was up for confirmation. Number two, I'm fascinated by the fact that the Mueller staff has not said beans, under instruction clearly not to leak anything up until now. Now all of a sudden they're leaking. Now, whether they're leaking with Mueller's acquiescence himself, we'll never know. We probably won't know. Nevertheless, it's terribly important because what it means is if they're willing to leak that the summary was not adequate or correct, that means if this kind of nonsense goes on, they're going to get on them. And number three, Nadler himself has said, look, we're the Congress. We deserve to hear the entire thing without redactions. That's what we want, and that's what we're going for, and that's why we're voting ourselves. This is subpoena power.
I don't know the answer to this, but is it leaking when the investigation is done? Are you sworn to secrecy?
I think in a way it is. I think it's a leak. I don't care. I don't want to get into a definitional issue here, but it is interesting that they kept shut during the entire thing, and now, and only now, are we beginning to hear, and not the full story.
No,
just that it isn't what Barr was saying it is.
So using the words, going back to the words in the New York Times article of their words, which was simmering frustrations, you can only assume that they've done a lot of work and are annoyed by what they see as the narrative that's being written.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So I guess it was a week or two ago, Libby said on the show that, you know, she predicted that sooner or later this was going to leak, mm-hmm. right? That we were going to see, if not the whole report, at least the legally shareable parts of the report. Mm-hmm. And this strikes me as, you know, the beginning of some of that. But I thought Andy Borowitz, for those of you who don't know,
That's Borowitz. Mm-hmm.
Writes a humor column for the New Yorker.
He's a friend of the station.
But he had a wonderful little piece called Barr Reads Moby Dick, Finds No Whales.
In essence, I was going to comment on that because it was a report that was hundreds of pages long. How can you possibly summarize essential findings in 4 days? So
in four pages. Yeah.
So in essence, we're all involved in research here. The faculty members on this panel, and we all know when we get something that's boiled down like this, it lacks the essential information to explain underlying causes. It basically is a series of facts devoid of content and context and explanation. So I think that's why I believe some of the members of Mueller's team are deeply frustrated, or as the article stated, there is sort of this simmering anger because it misrepresents their findings. And you would find that every time you boil something down to its essential message. So I think that's one of the underlying issues. Now, I'm curious how many members of Mueller's team are actually expressing this frustration, because we know the word "some" was used. Now, is that more than half? Is that one or two? I mean, it's very interesting to me that the term was vague. I don't know what to make
of
that.
Or is that because of how many people they talked to, meaning the New York Times? Yeah.
It's hard to believe you've done all of this work, which they did, and that you expect that somehow this is going to come out. It doesn't. And so, you know, you whisper in some reporter's ears from the New York Times.
I was a little surprised to see just that they'd written their own summaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
with the advantage of all the time needed. You know, they've taken the many days, many, to summarize what they thought was important, and that wasn't released as the summary. That seems an odd choice. I would fight back, I think, a little. I find it myself in this odd position of being to the right of some of the panel, which is...
no.
But I don't think the characterization as a national disgrace is yet justified. We will see whether that's true, but I don't think we yet know.
You should be used to the rest of the panel. After all, you worked extensively with rats.
Okay. I think we did. Sure, I like that.
Well,
couldn't resist.
Welcome you all to come back.
Couldn't resist.
So, just a few minutes ago, Joe, the Washington Post released some polls on this. And what's really interesting is the headline is "One Group That Wouldn't Be Surprised If Barr Undersold Mueller's Findings: Most Americans." And again, split on party lines, but very, very clear that most Americans say we still want to see the report.
Although Jim, the United States Congress, both houses, voted unanimously to release the report, and now the Republicans in the Senate, guess who, are saying not so fast.
So where does it go from here? Are we just going to keep on waiting for trickles and leaks and various redactions and a 400-page document with a lot of black in it? I don't.
Well, Barr isn't going to double cross the boss who appointed him. That's not going to happen. However, Barr now knows that there are a bunch of guys on the Mueller team who are willing to talk. And that's got to give him, because he's got a reputation to defend, after all. He was a former attorney general before and all the rest of it. So he's got to worry about that. And he'll know that if he doesn't comply, that they're going to release it themselves.
And it's going to play into, I think, one of our next stories. You've got a tax return document being sought, probably by Sabrina. You're going to have the Mueller report sought, if necessary, by Sabrina. And so at some point, the Supreme Court is going to come down and say, well, can you do this? Can you not do this?
So what do you think will happen? You were against the Supreme Court, which is now packed with Trumpites. What do you think happens?
Well, actually, I don't think it's even going to make it there in time before our next election. So I think this is just going to be a dragged out battle and nothing will change. People are polarized. The electorate is convinced one way or another. I'm not sure we actually see any shifting.
So I thought the most interesting thing about the Supreme Court part of it is most of the precedents we're looking at now were precedents where the Republicans were suing to get Clinton information.
Well, as you know,
which were based in part on the precedents that came from the Nixon investigations, which actually were both sides of Congress. So it really is interesting to watch how that plays out. And I think, you know, it's going to come down to Roberts again and his respect for stare decisis.
Roberts was in the ACA, Roberts was the one vote that made the difference. Now the court has more than one Trumpite on it. So we don't really know. The Nixon tapes, of course, you had the tapes in which, you know, it was quite clear they had the goods. They don't have that here. And so that makes a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, I think that
just have to see.
So Right. So what do they have? I mean, and
well, so they have a loaded Supreme Court with a bunch of Trumpites on it. It's
actually, I think you're exaggerating a little bit because they have not a bunch of Trumpites, but
no, they got more. In other words, they had a majority. Now they have a majority plus one.
But there weren't Trumpites, all of them. You know what I mean?
They were Bushites.
Yeah. Okay.
But meaning that, but I think to Vera's earlier point, that will we have time to do all of that before the next year?
Yeah, I doubt it.
Well, so it depends.
The Post is reporting that Trump will try and delay this until after the next election, at least on tax returns.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah.
Although, I actually think the Democrats may want that. Alan, you said that, I think, on the show yesterday.
But. Well, yeah, the Democrats want this to just hold on until the next election.
Oh, it's great for conversation, that's for sure.
More than conversation. You know, one of the reasons many of us think that Pelosi and the others did not want an impeachment effort now.
Sure.
Not that it was going to succeed in any case, and that was one reason they didn't want it, was that they wanted the issue for the election, and they should have.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a political strategy,
except the court is always allowed to accept cases on an expedited basis. Yep. Mm-hmm. So if they wanted to, they could.
Indeed. And when you think about the maneuverings, and we will get to this when we come back, but to Ewan's point of there's a lot of information that is being sought by the Democrats, and you wonder how much will actually come out. I mean, is there anyone in here that thinks we'll see the tax returns?
No, but I do think. You might see them, and when we come back, we could discuss that. But I just want to give kudos to Richie Neal, who turns out to be one of the brightest guys. He built his case. He did it right. As the chair of the Ways and Means Committee, he's given the responsibility under the law. He walked it himself over to the IRS and he handed it to them so there would be no, we lost it stuff. I'm just so enamored of his abilities.
Go ahead.
The tax return seems easier because the 1924 law is pretty clear that the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee has the authority to request. I don't see anybody overturning or refusing to enforce that, including the Supreme Court.
All right. We are out of time for the moment. We'll be back in just a few, and we will continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Jim Henler, Ewan McNay, Vera Carias-Kelly, all here. We welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have Vera Carias-Kelly, Ewan McNay. We have Ewan McGregor. Really made us all like say your name
slightly
correctly.
Slightly above me in the tax Google returns. Right?
Yes, well, I would imagine, but you know, work on it. Jim Henler is here and Alan Chartok, and we welcome your letters. Alan has a few. Let's go to those.
I do, Joe, and thank you for the opportunity. Vince says from Kingston, the lack of information concerning the Mueller report doesn't surprise me at all. I've been saying it all along. The American public was expecting the release of the Mueller report to be similar to Geraldo Rivera opening Al Capone's vault. I like it.
Good analogy.
Yeah. And Mark says, who cares? Move on. Panel, why would anyone believe that the New York Times report is nothing more than a continued attempt to justify the past lies that was undisputed evidence that there was collusion? This is all TDS, Trump delusional syndrome. No one cares anymore. Let's move on. The nation has more important things to tackle. Anybody want to handle that before I do?
Please.
No, you couldn't be wronger. The nation really cares, Mark, about what's going on here. We think we have a president, or many of us do, who plays loose, fast and loose with the laws and with the truth. And so it's very important, okay?
But, you know, Alan, I think there is one point there, because I've been thinking this for a long time. I think I said it on the show once, which is, you know, I in some ways viewed the Mueller report as a trap because it was never going to come out and show. So showing collusion is extremely difficult.
Like smoking gun.
It could say, yeah, I mean, unless there was some major smoking gun, which we probably would have heard about somehow because everyone was looking into this. On the other hand, all of the illegal payments, all of the monetary things going on, the emoluments. I mean, you know, Trump is doing so much that anyone else would get impeached for. And having all of this focus on this one thing. Now, this is not what this this guy wants us to go the other direction, right? Ignore the Mueller report because Trump's okay. I think we should not put as much emphasis on that investigation. Keep our eyes on some of the others because those are still ongoing. And those are the ones that get into really whether, you know, illegalities and money are involved.
And connect to that whole issue, you know, that you just mentioned. Also, to me, what stands out are some of the security clearances for family members. I mean, it all sort of links back to financial improprieties, payoffs, tax evasion, sort of the Al Capone route.
And by the way, there was no assertion that Trump didn't collude. It's just that there was no evidence about collusion. And that's a big difference. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No worries. I was going to comment just before we had the break that, today's stories are all very much interlinked. The question of tax returns. One of them is the Donald J. Trump Revocable Trust, which controls Mar-a-Lago. You know, if you see where the payments are coming to Mar-a-Lago, that's very informative. There's a whole web of information that can potentially be released. We'll see how much of it comes out.
Okay. And Dennis says, I have twice heard Alan say both houses voted unanimously to release the report and the Senate is now opposed. I don't believe the Senate ever voted on it. Joe, we go to you.
So the Senate blocked a measure that demanded special counsel Robert Mueller's final report on Russian. This is March 14th. And the House passed a non-binding resolution with a vote of 420-0. Urging for the public release of any report. And then the Senate was poised to pass it, but then it was blocked by Lindsey Graham, who asked that the resolution also include calling for the appointment of a new special counsel to investigate how the Justice Department conducted its investigation.
Okay, thanks for that clarification, and thank you, Dennis. And thank you to Jamie, who says, could there ever be a doubt that if Trump was involved, deception would follow? The minute Trump got his AG, he started to rehearse his reaction to being absolved of all crimes from the beginning of time. But the Trump cannot accept that he cannot control information or free speech and the truth will be known. We all know that this is out of control train with no brakes where no brakes are going. The only question is how long it will be till we get there, till we survive the crash.
All right.
So, you know, I came on the shows for the first time before the midterms and said, you know, the only thing we can do to stop that train wreck is vote. And I think that's really where our focus has to be now.
Well, you were right.
The only thing that's going to stop this Trump thing, and you've said it too, Alan, is 2020 voting against the man. If he's not the president, a lot of these issues become moot. A lot of the subpoenas suddenly are no longer subpoenaing a president if we care anymore. But meanwhile, we can stop the destruction of the country that's going on in the background while this is distracting us.
I think something else we need to watch very carefully is tomorrow's unemployment numbers when they will be released, because I think that will be the beginning of an indicator if, in fact, our economy is slowing down or stalling. And I think that will eventually have ripple effects in some of the states where there was very strong support for Trump. So I'm convinced that the combination of voting and economic realities, if in fact unemployment rates are slowing down, if that will make a difference.
Not to sound like a conspiracy theorist, I just want to go back to something that Jim was just talking about. Yesterday, the president said on two occasions that bringing into question the election results in the midterms and questioning as to, in many races where they were close, he claims that they went for the Democrat, and saying that the deck is stacked. It seems, and we've talked about this, but it seems that, I mean, you're setting up your playbook for what 2020 is going to be, right? I mean, that seems to be, he did it during the general election in 2016 and saying that it's rigged. So if you start that now,
Well, who's going to believe it but the same voters that already believe it? It's not going to change anything. That's a strategy. He tried the whole Obamacare attack again and withdrawal or, you know, or just sort of rearranging health care policy. And, you know, that I mean, he has these trial balloons. And when the Republicans come back and warn him or say that's not going to work, same with the closing the border with Mexico. What was it? Right. $730 million a day of economic loss to us.
No and, avocados. The millennials will go crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the silly aspect to that. But, you know, automobile industry and all, you know, that's farming right. and a number of large sectors would be directly affected. So he has these trial balloons. And whenever he gets hard pushback from some of the Republicans that are, you know, that he feels closer to, particularly in the Senate, then he goes, okay, well, that's not going to be a path. So how about this next one? So nothing new, really. We're just talking about the same things and for months.
This one, at least, the data are really clear. This is not, you know, the voter suppression is a far bigger threat to any, you know, integrity of democracy.
Oh, yeah.
The only proven case of vote tampering or extra votes was the Republicans in North Carolina. So yeah. This really is a zero issue that's attempting to be repeated. You're right. It's a playbook, but it has mm-hmm. zero validity in this case.
Yeah, unless he decides he's not going to leave. Which we've discussed on this program as well.
Let's not go there. I've been talking to a lot of people in the military. The good news is that we don't look like we're heading for a coup yet.
Yet.
Bad news is yet.
All right. So let us go to other stories and what else is making news this morning. Did you? Oh, yeah, you finished your letters. Okay, good.
I did. Thank you.
Excellent. So we go to
Brexit.
Thank you. You know what? I'm going to let me take a break real quick. I'll get my computer working and we will come back and we'll talk. Yes, we'll talk about Brexit. We'll talk about I will probably talk about the tax return fight before that.
Yeah.
And then we'll get into that. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Let us talk about the tax returns. The House Democrats seek 6 years of Trump's personal and business tax returns. The chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee asked the IRS on Wednesday for 6 years of the president's personal and business tax returns, a request which the president immediately said he was not inclined to comply. Okay. The committee chairman's letter to the IRS and Trump's immediate and public response set up what is likely to become an intense and drawn-out court fight as Democrats push to see tax records they think can shed light on numerous aspects of Trump's business dealings, and Trump resists their demands. The Ways and Means Committee's request was expected, but nonetheless represented a significant escalation in House Democrats' wide-ranging probes of Trump and his administration.
As I said, I think this one's actually pretty clear, right?
Yes.
The law says the Treasury Secretary shall deliver. The authority is very clear. It's not a wiggle room situation. I don't even think Steven Mnuchin's going to refuse. I really don't. I think this one's going to go through without too much fuss. You know, Trump says he's not inclined to comply. He doesn't need to do anything. The IRS are the people that are going to release the returns.
So, wait a second. The IRS is an agency of the executive branch. It reports to Trump. They are not about to take him on, in my mind. And for whatever reason, we know from the very beginning, he hasn't been acquiescing to this information. Probably because it's just too dangerous for him. Something is in those returns that has him really concerned and worried. It may be conflict of interest. It may be somehow he's earning money because of his position. It could well be that he doesn't have the money that he said he had.
Maybe he's not paying any taxes.
That we're pretty sure on.
And it may be, says Jim, quite correctly, that he's not paying what he should be paying. Yeah, well. All of those, mm-hmm. in other words, here's a guy who's bragging that he's a billionaire all the time. And what if it comes out that he's not paying his fair share? What will that do to most Americans, including those people in the middle and lower middle who voted for him the last time?
Well, he's played this card before of saying that, you know, I mean, the people have said that they actually respect, you know, why should I, he has said, why should I pay more than I should?
So the other thing I think that this is going to play into is, I don't know if you remember, but a few years ago, there were big attacks on the IRS because they were, you know, auditing the right-wing groups and supposedly not auditing the left-wing groups. Actually, if you looked at the data, it didn't show that. But, of course, the right-wing loves to claim they're being victimized by the government. So this is, you know, that I believe will be Trump's next play, is to say, look, you know, the IRS is part of the deep state conspiracy. They're going to release, you know, you can't trust what they say. So he set up years ago, you know, his defenses against all this stuff, even before he was president, because he was already not being willing to release information that he should have. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. You know, I think, Ellen, something you've said often is it's never going to sway the Trump voters. The answer is I don't care. What it really has to sway is that middle group who didn't vote for Hillary. They didn't vote for Trump. They just stayed home. If that group comes out and votes, it's a whole different game.
I've already heard.
It's white suburban women. It's younger voters. If those folks will come vote, it'll change the whole game.
They don't only have to be against Trump. They have to be in favor of whoever the Democrats.
I've already been in conversation, Vera, with people who are telling me that if it isn't my guy, I'm not voting. It's unbelievable.
That's the most dangerous thing.
Well, I don't know. I mean, this might be a case, but I haven't heard that among the young voters that I speak with, to be honest.
And what are they saying?
They're saying, we just want to beat Trump, so we have our preferred candidate, but we'll support any Democrat.
Well, I would like to hope against hope that you are an accurate describer of what's going on. I do know that in the past, younger voters have turned out in not sufficient numbers to make a difference.
Sure.
You know, when I was teaching at New Paltz, I used to get blue in the face talking why people really ought to get out and get out and vote. And then they even made it easier by saying college students, for example, could vote from their dormitories instead of the old nonsense about having to vote from Levittown, from which where they may have come. But they didn't. And that is a big problem. I don't know how you solve it.
But well, you have an inspirational candidate. How about that?
It's early. Yeah, it's early to talk about this. Let's do something else.
Yes, we have letters.
Oh yes, so we do, Joe. Thank you. Let's see. Steve says, after 2020, is the panel saying we will just ignore all Trump's illegal activity? Pardon me. If he loses the 2020 election, it will no longer matter if he is not president, and we will just move on with no justice?
No, what
That's
we
a
hope
fascinating
for,
question.
What we hope for is the Southern District of New York and various other legal entities that have nothing to do with the political realm that simply go after criminal activity. That's what we're hoping for.
The whole
question of whether a sitting president can be indicted is not the same question as whether a former president can
be indicted. Which is why some people think he has to run again.
Yep.
Yeah, in fact, I actually think that may be why he's running again.
Tries not to leave.
Well, you know, this business of the political ramifications of going after a candidate. So, for example, Nixon. Political scientists who study this stuff will tell you that a good deal of the Republican base in this country is still furious that Nixon was picked on and thrown out of office, and that it has made a huge, what is it when it comes out after the boat goes by, you know, the wave, whatever they make.
Aftershock?
Ripple
effect?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, here we go. At least I can't. The foreigner came in handy. Yeah,
ding, ding, ding.
Right.
We need a social scientist, not one of us hardcore science guys.
And people haven't forgotten that. By the way, I haven't seen either the Nixon thing on CNN or the coming Bush years. But if you look at the promotional material for both of them, Tricky Nixon is described just that way. But the Bushes have a much better look to the promos than the Nixons. And I think maybe that's CNN proving that they're fair.
Or maybe in contrast to our current presidency, you know, some of the Bush years seem better, even though as somebody who pays close attention to foreign policy, I am not inclined to actually compliment the Bush family.
Or to Dick Cheney, for
example. But at least during the Bush years, you had a foreign policy to be opposed to.
Correct. Here you're entirely confused. If somebody in my class asked me, can you explain what our foreign policy towards the Middle East is? I go, no, can you?
That's funny. Okay, so it's a good question,
like
Steve.
The president.
Steve, I think that's a very good question that he asks, whether it will just sort of go into the atmosphere or, you know, if they find something, or whether, you know, because both parties recognize it's not good for them to pursue it.
So you know, my thinking on that, Alan, is it will depend on what comes out. So if it's an actual crime, right, something that's really indictable, it's one thing. If it's it's sort of, you know, there's still all these people yelling about Hillary and her email and go after her and upset that he didn't go after, which, of course, would have been a very bad political move. I think, you know, sort of if they just look like they're pursuing Trump for no good reason, that would be very different than if it turns out there's an actual illegality.
Well, we get letters from people all the time who say that's exactly what's happening. They're pursuing Trump. Why don't you people leave him alone? He's doing good. You know, the Vera point of earlier in the hour about watching what's happening to the stock exchange, watch what's happening to the reports that are coming out about the economy is extremely important because, you know, if this hands-off laissez-faire idea of letting the economy grow and it doesn't matter and all you people shut up because we're going to all make money on our 401ks and the rest of it, that's got to be pretty heady stuff. But if it turns around, then I think he's in trouble.
Well, I think one of the indicators, is unemployment, I mentioned, right? Because unemployment is one of those key critical points. If you have several consecutive months of no job growth, that, you know, that indicates a problem. So we'll see what the numbers say tomorrow.
I don't know. There's a problem in Great Barrington where I live, where every store seems to have a sign out front saying we're hiring now,
right?
You know, come in and raising the rates so that they're paying. And so we'll see. Okay, so Kathleen says, hello, panel. Trump bar McConnell can try to hide the full report, but will hurt Trump, not help him. Trump's relationship with Putin has placed him under suspicion by many Americans. Many of us assume now that our president is compromised and beholden to the Kremlin. Hiding the facts from Americans will make Trump appear even worse. And that's Kathleen who writes to us.
I think he's also beholden to the Saudis.
Sure.
Financially.
And even more so,
Yep.
And Paul says, protest events today. There will be nationwide protests calling for the release of Mueller's full report today at 5 o'clock in many locations across the country. You can go to moveon.org to find an event near you. To which I say, great. On the other hand, has it helped in the past? Have these widespread meetings helped? Not really.
But the thing is, I like the fact when people organize and gather to discuss and demand what within a democracy what they're expecting. I think protests and articulations of opposition is always important.
Get the energy going.
Mm-hmm.
And John writes to us, watching the collusion truther fanatics continue to try to convince their confused flock to keep believing and watching them concoct new conspiracy theories to keep it all going isn't primarily infuriating or funny, but sad. Watching people be duped isn't enjoyable. That's from John, who knows the inside skinny.
All right. Thank you very much. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Quick story, and then we'll go to a break here, but we'll talk about Jared Kushner, hasn't been identified as the senior White House official whose security clearance was denied by career officials. You'll remember earlier this week that there was a whistleblower that came forward and ultimately known as Senior White House Official 1 in the committee documents, it's now come out that is Jared Kushner.
I think there was no doubt about that.
I don't think there was much doubt about that.
Official confirmation.
Now we know.
What was interesting is that she said that part of the reason for the denials or being overridden was that there were drugs involved in other things. Now, that's what I wanted to see, a direct line drawn to one of them about that.
Well, and so last year, President Trump directed his then chief of staff, John Kelly, to give Kushner a top secret security clearance, despite concerns expressed by career intelligence officers. The new details about the internal debate over Kushner's clearance revives questions about the severity of the issues flagged in his background investigation and Kushner's access to government secrets. And security clearance experts say the issues raised in Kushner's background investigation are significant. David Chris says it's a big deal. He is a senior Justice Department official during the administrations of George W. Bush and Barack Obama, and a founder of the consulting firm Culper Partners. The kinds of concerns that she mentioned are very serious. Senior staff at the White House, and particularly relatives of the U.S. president, are incredibly attractive targets for our adversaries seeking to gather intelligence or exert covert influence.
My point about Kushner is really, you know, He went on, I think it was Fox with Laura Ingraham. I listened to some of that interview, and he described himself as squeaky clean, unfair accusations, when in fact we know he has all kinds of financial interests. His building in New York City was underwater. He needed massive amounts of financial assistance, which he got from, in part, Deutsche Bank, which is one of the dirtiest banks in the world. We are still wondering how he got access to so much money, so many loans, when in fact he had financial problems. We also know Kushner goes to Saudi Arabia all the time. We know there are no records of what he discusses in those meetings. And then he has access to all our national, most important national security information. My question is, how can a man who has absolutely no experience in foreign policy, has no idea about how our intelligence services work or what needs to be protected, he apparently represents the Trump clan rather than the American people. To me, the whole question about having granted him the security clearance is at the center of the deepest corruption we have seen in a long time in this country.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Jim Henler, Ewan McNay, and Vera Carias-Kelly. We welcome you all. Panel at WAMC.org. Before we move into some other topics, we do have some letters. We'll do those, and then we will move on and get to some other stuff. Actually, Jim, you had a couple things to say.
Well, I was just on the top secret stuff.
Yes.
So,
Oh, right, you're into that.
I've had to do the paperwork several times. It's a long story. But
this is security clearance.
Yeah, so to get a top secret clearance, an awful lot of stuff is checking stuff. And basically what they're looking for is, could someone blackmail you? Is there anything that could be used against you to give information? If you're turned down, it means something has been found in that space. Yep. Now, sometimes that's something like, so I had one where they needed to verify. I was out of the country for a while living somewhere else. They had to find someone trustworthy who they could verify I had actually been there. Mm-hmm. Like, that wasn't too hard. I had people. But if you have money coming from – so I have an entire form I fill out, because sometimes I get honoraria from foreign countries. I have an entire form I fill out if I have any kind of potential conflicts of interest with U.S. companies. Mm. And then there's all the drug things and legalities.
Which you don't do the drug thing.
So I fill out paperwork. But, yeah. but the answer
there's
is,
testing, Alan. Testing.
It's even worse. Yeah. I mean, even if it's legal in Massachusetts, still federally illegal. So, for example, I would not be allowed to maintain my security clearance if I was caught using drugs.
I don't know if you know this, Jim, but they're going to be filling up balloons, which will float in Massachusetts now because the air is so high.
But anyway, what I was going to say is, if you look at the things that could compromise somebody, and you look at the things Vera was talking about right before the break, it would be very clear why Kushner would have a lot of trouble getting clearance. And, you know, there are very few people in the government who can override a security clearance decision. So it's very unusual.
We know one who can and has.
Yeah, and they said at least 25 times in this administration. That's what. So the reason this whistleblower came forward wasn't any one case.
It's this pattern, right?
There were many cases, and when she asked about it, she was demoted. Mm-hmm. So that's the claim that's causing her to come to court.
So do we care whether a whistleblower has other than pure motives when they blow the whistle? The only thing that's important is the information, right?
Supposedly.
Yeah. So, and the other thing is that she suffers from a rare case of dwarfism.
Oh, I know.
And one of the ways that they were getting even with her was putting stuff up higher than she could reach. That's terrible. That's just awful.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's incredibly courageous for her to step forward and go public and file this lawsuit because she can expect, even though she will be protected because she's a federal employee and a political appointee, she has a long career in the department. She will be exposed to a lot of criticism and challenges and pushback.
Ready.
And I really have to say she's an incredibly courageous person.
By the way, use the word lawsuit. I don't know that's what's happening here. I think what's happening is she's just coming forward.
No, there's a lawsuit. There's actually two lawsuits pending.
Oh, I see.
An EEO Act and a retribution act.
I do apologize.
Oh, I just heard it yesterday. Her lawyer did an interview on an NPR show that was covered at, what channel was that again? WAMC, which is where I get most of my news.
Roshni writes us an important letter about avocados. Dearest panel, please don't perpetuate millennial stereotypes. I'm sure a lot of people would miss avocados. If millennials are overly into avocados, at least it's healthier than Twinkies and tastier than kale.
That is for sure.
I think it's avocado toast that we're specifically talking about.
And just to be fair, I have a child who is a millennial, and they are very clearly anti-avocado. So I do know.
Well, you've raised them right, Jim. Congratulations.
I love avocados.
But you got to get them right.
That reminds me. Do you remember the Fox News map or the comment?
The
three Mexican countries, and then a map was created for social media that showed Central American Mexico, soccer Mexico, and all these different parts of Latin America. We call became Mexican, and then some people posted said, "Where is Avocado Mexico?" And we have all this on social media. I'm sorry, I'm veering off. Yes,
well, not
no, but, no, but I, I apologize to
not
any millennials.
I just want to add to
offended.
The conversation by saying my toughest time, because we like avocados in our house, is when you go to the pile of avocados, knowing which one you want to take. Because, what's the name in the Three Bears? There's too
Goldie
soft.
Box.
Yeah, there's too soft, and there's too hard, and there's just right. But how do you find
right.
the just right? I don't know. You know what I mean? Okay, so that's Roshni.
Now we're going to get all the avocado letters.
Right. Yeah, of course we will. And Justin says, comment, Trump's base would not turn against him if they found out he didn't pay his fair share. We already went over that. They would just praise him for his business acumen. Also, I'm a millennial, and I'm not in the camp of if my guy doesn't win, I won't vote. Currently, I am a strong Sanders supporter, and I'm in the camp of the Democrats put up a puppet or a usurper, as they did with HRC, then I'll look elsewhere for a representative of the people. Yeah, well, Justin, there are those of us who think beating Trump is the number one thing to do here. And if what you're saying is, if you're not happy with a so-called interloper, you're going to vote maybe for a third-party candidate or something else, that will help assure that Trump
or
will be
worse,
the president.
Or worse, not vote, right?
That's how Trump won last time. The data's there. It's very clear. It was the suppression of Hillary voters. It was not getting out the base. That base was already – they came out more, but that didn't swing any of the major states. What swung those states was the suburbs voting less.
And let me just read one part of the second – let me just read one part of the second paragraph again. Currently, I'm a strong Sanders supporter. right? Mm-hmm. Remember that from the last
Correct.
Time?
Yeah.
And I'm in the camp of, if the Democrats put up a puppet or a usurper such as they did with HRC, then I'll look elsewhere for a representative of the people. Well, I, as you all know, mm-hmm. voted for Bernie. I espoused for Bernie, but I sure as hell voted for Hillary when the time came up.
So, but this also brings me to a larger question. I think a two-party system is simply outdated. And a lot of voters are tired of this rigidity. And as a European and as somebody who believes in the superiority of the parliamentary system, although at the moment I might want to hold back because I joked earlier, England, we may see the end of May before the end of
the
April,
Kingdom.
But the UK is certainly our disaster example, right? In essence, I think a two-party system is a problem. It really doesn't provide a lot of options.
Well, as a teacher of this subject, I have tremendous respect for what you're saying.
But now he's going to come out with ferocious criticism. He always phrases that before he comes out.
But the fact of the matter is, this is what we got right now. In New York State, in fact, Andrew Cuomo and some of his friends are trying to outlaw third parties, basically. The third parties would not be outlawed themselves, but they couldn't nominate the same person on more than two lines. So, Vera, I have great respect for what you say. And in the long term, maybe someday after we're all gone, this will change.
Well, I think at some point we're going to push for change. And if young people push for change, that's maybe one way they do it. Now, we might have different opinions.
You're right.
But I'm just saying we got to recognize that people get to vote for who they want to vote for.
As always, you're right. And
ooh, I like that.
Well, you too.
I should tell my students to say this more often.
Yeah. Put it on a pillow. Embroider it.
I'm tweeting. Alan Chartok says.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of things that can go on pillows. Trumpers don't own the court, says Richard. There are still four liberals and an occasional reasonable Roberts. Okay, and then we get to Joseph, who says, Nixon? Curious that Alan should mention Nixon, as I read this past week about a CIA plan to initiate a regime change in Venezuela. This plan was formulated during Nixon's term, and imagine my surprise when I noticed that the CIA plan included a massive power outage initiated at the hydro dam, and what a coincidence that the recent power outage was initiated at the same hydro station. Mr. Trump, the oil companies, the Koch brothers, who depend heavily on oil from Venezuela, and the corporatocracy all want to overthrow the elected president. If all those corporate pigs want this, shouldn't we be leery of the motive? I think that's a loaded. I love this. If all those corporate pigs. Okay, so anyway, there you go.
All right. Let's move on. We'll talk about other stories. And so, Ewan, give us the latest on Brexit and where we are. I will admit, I sort of have lost track.
You and everybody else. So, there was a nail-biting vote yesterday.
Correct.
Where the Cooper bill passed by a single vote, was rushed through Parliament, was rushed through the House of Commons in a single day. This is a very rare event. It's now in the House of Lords, where they're going to try to rush it through there in a single day, even more unprecedented. One of the key features of the House of Lords is that it's very rare and frowned upon to have anything akin to cloture. The whole point of the House of Lords is supposed to be you get these elongated debates, anyone can raise a point. And so there have now been three uses of what is described by House of Lords rules each time as a rare and exceptional process to curtail debate.
And what was the substance of the bill, Ewan?
So, all right, this is very wonky. The Cooper bill says that the Prime Minister must request a delay, that the House of Commons must be given the opportunity to vote on that delay if the European Union offers it. It gives the Prime Minister still leeway in picking the date to which she would like to request a delay, but that can be overruled by Parliament, by the House of Commons. It basically is an attempt to rule out the possibility of a no-deal Brexit, provided that the European Union, which everyone assumes will acquiesce, allows a further extension of the Brexit process.
So you're an expert on this. I wanted to ask you a question. No, you are. I wanted to ask you a question. Most pundits will tell you now, and watchers of the situation, that if there was a revote, it would go the other way.
Yes.
It would go for staying. Why don't they do that, especially since May was against it in the beginning, right?
Well, the Brexiteers will tell you that would not be respecting the will of the people. I think that's actually kind of weird that any time you take a second vote on something that's been previously voted, you are potentially overriding the will of a previous vote. So I think that's a non-legitimate argument.
Supreme Court does it all the time.
There's a practical argument. There's no time. To organize a referendum and to get the ballot papers out and so on before the 11th of April, no chance in that. So the only way that will happen is if there is a further extension of a significant length.
With an understanding that they were going to revote, right?
So, Ewan, what happens in the Cooper Amendment with the EU election? So in May, I think 23rd. It's 23rd, mm-hmm. there's an election.
Right.
So if Britain is still in the EU on May 23rd, they participate.
Correct.
And if they've left before, they don't.
Correct.
So there's kind of this ticking gun there. So if they ask for the extension...
So the next key date, and it's been mooted as a possible extension date, is May 22nd.
Right.
Because you're quite correct. That would allow, permit a Brexit, and therefore the UK would not take part in the European elections. If the...
Well, that's a deep sit.
If the UK... Because there are so many interesting details. If the UK is still part of the EU on May 23rd, they'll take part in elections. One, it's going to cost about £100 million. So that's one argument that's being put in favour of exiting before that. There is an issue raised just today that if the UK takes part in those European elections and then eventually Brexits, does that illegitimize the elected European Parliament, requiring a revote of the whole European election? So, what do I think is going to... on Monday, I thought that the Common Market 2.0, which the Labour Party decided to whip in favour of, had a good chance of passing. It failed by, I think, 12 votes. It's still pretty clear. The only thing Parliament agrees on is that a no-deal Brexit is bad. But that's a vote against something. There is still no majority for anything in favor of a vote for something.
The thing that I just can't get over is that the alternatives, they put up 8, they all went down. They put up 4, they all went down. At what point do you start to consolidate those to one that can actually pass?
That is what's being attempted. And note that the Speaker has authority to choose which of those actually get voted on. Not all of them even
get
votes.
Exactly.
So there was an attempt yesterday. Theresa May invited Jeremy Corbyn and Nicola Sturgeon to come talk. And the report from Nicola Sturgeon, who probably still has the most credit in the UK as a whole as being a rational, unbiased optimizer of a politician, says that Corbyn was being reasonable and May wasn't. It doesn't surprise me.
Well, now, and the BBC is reporting this morning that the discussions between May and Corbyn were described this morning as constructive.
Sure, which is political speak for we're still going to keep talking to one another. So Nicola Sturgeon.
We're going to say that we'll order out for lunch.
So Nicola Sturgeon's the third party there, right? So
yeah.
Scotland, of course, voted very strongly to remain. I think it is very likely that if Brexit does occur, it'll also cause the breakup of the UK because Scotland wants to go back in. Scotland's saying, no, we don't want to be part of this idiocy. We'd like to be an independent country and a member of the EU.
And Northern Ireland, I think, will be also an issue for conversation here because I think if this, there's a referendum in Scotland, I just talked with some Republicans.
Irish Republicans.
Yes, Irish Republicans about this issue, and it was deeply suggested that that would be a direction to sort of try to unite with the country of Ireland.
That's not going to happen, but yes, the Northern Ireland border is a key issue in all of this.
I keep on reading the term shadow ministers. Mm-hmm. What are shadow ministers?
So the concept of Her Majesty's loyal opposition.
I think I aspire to be a shadow minister.
I have a friend who's a backbencher lord.
Unlike in the U.S., where you elect a president, no one elected Theresa May. She is the representative of the elected party, the Conservative Party, currently holding a majority with the support of this rump DUP Northern Ireland bunch of... Okay, my opinion on them is not printable or sayable. So, the position of prime minister is not an elected one. There is no national vote for a prime minister. Her Majesty's opposition, the party that is not in power but has the majority of the not-in-power seats, in this case the Labour Party. So Jeremy Corbyn is the leader of the Labour Party. Again, not a mass-elected position. That's an internal party position. He is Theresa May's opposition counterpart. He has a shadow cabinet basically all the people that are in the real cabinet, they have a counterpart in the shadow cabinet to have the opposing and you know, alternative point of view proposed.
Right.
When you look at that, the views that are coming up, and I guess to your point earlier, even what Alan was saying about a resolution, this is a lot to do by my way of thinking. It's next Thursday, a week. They have a week to figure this out, really.
We've had 3 years. You know, that was March 29th. Then we all celebrated No Brexit Day. We now have April 11th. That's going to get punted as well. The only question, and this was brought up a moment ago, is whether it goes May 22nd or further. Well, if it goes further, my guess is it's going to be a lot further. It'll be a year or so. Basically for the country to try and work out what it wants to do.
And the EU is insisting that there be elections.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a regular election. We're not going to, as a European, we're not going to change our elections because the Brits can't figure out what they
but
want.
The Britain,
I'm playing European Union right now.
That's right, but the European Union elections would have to go forward in Britain. So, in other words, they would have to...
Oh, everyone agrees on that. If we are still within the EU on May 23rd, there will be a European election that includes the UK.
So the real question here
is...
It may well be
that to get that longer extension... The EU will demand a revote. You would only have the extension past May 22nd if there's going to be a new referendum.
So back to the original question about the Cooper Bill. The Cooper Bill does not make a no-deal Brexit illegal. Right. It is still a possibility that if Theresa May and the EU cannot agree on an extension, then there's nothing for Parliament to vote on approving that extension.
But again, everybody agrees that's bad.
So if that is the case, that may not happen until April 10th. You're then faced with the prospect of having something less than a day, maybe even a couple of hours, at which point the only way to avoid a no-deal Brexit is for Theresa May to say, Article 50, just kidding, cancelling that whole thing, at which point Brexit goes away.
Or revote with some slight change the May plan and pass this time, although it doesn't look likely.
I think at that point there's just not time to do that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that may be,
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody for being with us. Wow, a lot to think about, but my appreciation to the entire panel. Vera, Ewan, Jim, Alan, thank you. We'll be back after the short break.
Thank you, Joe.